Hello, I'm Beth Kesselman, and this is Smashing the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring and a St. Stephen's Community House production. Thanks for joining us. St. Stephen's Community House acknowledges that our locations are situated upon traditional territories of the Wendat, Anishinaabeg Nation, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations, and the Métis Nation. The treaty that was signed for this particular parcel of land is collectively referred to as the Toronto Purchase and applies to lands east of Brown's Line to Woodbine Avenue and north towards Newmarket. St. Stephen's Community House is a guest, and we recognize the enduring presence of the Indigenous peoples on this land. Welcome back to Smash the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring. This is episode 3. Today we're going to be discussing job development. But before we begin, don't forget to tweet at us. Feel free to engage on both Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @PeerPathwaysTO on both accounts. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. This month, October, is Disability Employment Awareness Month. Some of the things we always aim to discuss on Smash the Ceiling are easy ways to recruit and support people of all abilities, in addition to supporting inclusive environments in the workplace. And so we are very excited to continue the discussion to promote awareness on both visible and invisible disabilities in the workforce. So if you'd like to join in the conversation, join us by engaging on social media with the hashtag DEAM, D-E-A-M, Disability Employment Awareness Month, or reach out and talk to us about your success stories of inclusion at work. You never know, maybe you'll be asked to talk about it on Smash the Ceiling. Also, this, the second week of October, is Citizenship Week. So today, our conversation touches on some of the issues that newcomers to Canada might be experiencing as they join the Canadian workforce. As mentioned last episode, we'll be talking about job development, and today you'll be listening in on a conversation with Anthony Garcia, a job developer with the Connections Program at St. Stephen's Community House. The Connections Program is a skills building and employment program for newcomers to Canada. Anthony and I talk about what job development is and some of the human resource functions that job developers can have to support a business and a new employee. One last thing before we get started. At the very end of this episode, there's an excerpt from our next one. It's an interview with Perrin Kothari, the founder of the Livelihood Project. He talks about his transition from banking vice president to the founder of a socially minded organization whose mission is to help people facing barriers to suitable and sustainable employment build a resilient career path, especially in the face of automation as technology progresses. So thanks for joining us again, and we hope you enjoy the discussion with Anthony.
There's a lot of employers out there who are socially minded or who would give somebody a chance, or there's a demographic that's close to their hearts. You know, maybe they grew up in a really poor neighborhood and they want to give a youth who's growing up in a disadvantaged living situation a chance. Like, there's all sorts of different elements there, but they don't do it because they don't do it for whatever reason, and they maybe need a little help or they're intimidated.
Okay.
And so for today, I just want to talk to you about your experiences working with employers and having employers reach out to you, or you reaching out to employers, how you go about it, and what the experiences of those employers are when they're first making contact. But, so you took the job development course.
Yes, I did, yes. And it teaches you about clients and how to separate them and how to assist them in finding employment. We classify each client as either motivated, reliable, and dependable. So that's just the base of what we do. And then once we determine where they fit in that scale, we have certain techniques that was taught.
Okay, so before you were a job developer, you
yes.
were in recruitment.
I was, yes.
What kind of recruitment were you doing? I actually don't know this.
Yes, I was actually working for a private company called the People Bank.
Okay.
And they were based out in Mississauga. And they're basically a temporary agency where they have contracts with different clientele, and we have different departments staffing temporary needs and permanent needs. My role there was a bit of an account manager for, if you've heard of the OSAP or student loans.
Yeah.
So I guess my role was filling roles such as data entry, call center, everything that the student loan department needed.
Okay, so when you started this job, you were already really familiar with like the human resources and needs component and like, you know, job evaluations and like business needs. So you came into this role already really knowledgeable about that.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so when you're talking to an employer from a previous account manager perspective, you're already doing a business needs assessment when you chat with them on the phone.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And a lot of employers like approach you for employment services. In job, actually, we should probably backtrack a little bit, and I should ask you, what is job development?
Job development, it really depends, I believe, in which program you're involved with.
So what program are you involved with?
Right now, I'm in the Connections program, so I'm working with newcomers who are currently on social assistance who need to qualify for our program. And the job development is somewhat different compared to the ES services, because initially, the first thing we have to do is I have to basically find co-op placements for anywhere from 20 to 30 students, and we have about 3 cohorts throughout the year. And finding co-op placements for 6 weeks as compared to colleges and universities for 6 months. And these 6 weeks, it is full-time Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And these are office type roles, customer service type roles, or retail roles. And these are for newcomers, so you can imagine the challenges with communication, the lack of work experience, and just the confidence getting into the workforce. So,
and with the demographics that you're working with, do you find that you're also working with people with disabilities as well?
Yes, because we will get maybe a few clients who are receiving ODSP.
But there are people around who aren't on ODSP but are still living with disabilities.
Yes, probably not disclosed, undiagnosed, or who knows what, but we do have clients, and we still work with clients. We try to help them the best we can.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And you find everybody gets a placement.
Yes, everybody gets a placement. By the end of the 12-week training.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what's the process like for finding a placement?
So finding a placement is, it's a balance of contacting current employers that we've established relationships with. And this program's been over 25 years. So I also find employers through various websites. Indeed, I'll cold call them and present some clients. Hey, maybe you want to try out a client for a 6-week trial. And we explain the benefits of our program, the type of training they receive, so it's a win-win situation for both the student and the employer.
Okay, absolutely. And do you have employers calling you randomly?
Very rarely. In terms of marketing, we really don't have, I don't think we advertise our program, but we do market it to a lot of nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
But rarely do we ever get calls into the center asking for students. It's more relationships I've established with employers, and maybe they'll spread it word of mouth to their friends. And
then they'll contact.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how do those conversations usually go? You get on the phone and the person's like, hi, I'm looking to take on a person? Like, how does that usually go?
You know, I'll be honest, a lot of employers are very hesitant, right? Because they are hiring newcomers, and there's a stigma, or they think that, oh, okay, the lack of communication, it's going to be bad for business. Or the experience, it's not to Canadian standards. But what I guess they don't realize is that a lot of the newcomers, they bring their own experience, they bring their own skills, which probably would not be taught in Canada, and they bring this sort of diversity into a company that that really helps to make that company flourish sometimes. And usually employers, I have to sell them on what the clients, what type of skills they might have.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just the trial. Depending on the client, if the MRD is there, which I talked about earlier, the motivation, reliability, and dependability, then that's all employers are really looking for. is just somebody who will show up, be there, and be reliable. And employers will train.
It's true.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, like, you can train people on a lot of things, but you can't train people on, like, their core, and, like, who they are as, like, a core person, and also their effort level and their commitment. With your role as a job developer, you are a part of that employment agreement, right?
That's correct.
So it's not that this employer is hiring on somebody, and then you're like, here you go, here's this new person, and I'll see you in 6 weeks. What's the relationship that you have with both the new employee and the employer? How does that work?
Yes. Well, with the new employee, we have a contract. We always state in our contract what our role is as an organization for St. Stephen's, what my role as a job developer is, and what role the employer plays. So for clients, we know that it is a scary thing coming into the labor market or potentially meeting new people where you can speak English, but you're not confident in speaking English. Mm-hmm. So the relationship is a lot of support, a lot of guidance, a lot of mentoring, a lot of motivating. Mm-hmm. With the employer, it's educating them on certain things they might not be accustomed to, such as a lot of our clients have religious or they have to pray at certain times, and maybe some employers are not aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
What else? We have to teach some of the clients about legislation, employment standards, your rights, just simple things like when to take your break or how long your lunch is, right?
Yep.
So there's a lot of mentoring and educating throughout the whole process.
And you also help the participant negotiate their employment, like hours and accommodations and things. Do you help with those kinds of, sometimes what can be a really awkward conversation, that's something that you help with too, right?
Yes.
So what is that like? What is that about, the accommodation piece? Because everybody has different needs. And some of them are medical, and some of them are religious, and some of them are scheduling based on family status, and all sorts of different things that go into the Human Rights Code in which people can require accommodation, and you're working with a demographic that might be a little demure in stating their rights and requesting accommodation. So how do you bridge that gap, and how do you approach an employer about those sorts of things to make that easy for all parties?
Interesting. If there was a situation, usually we can discuss it sort of like a case conference where I discuss with the employer and the clients. I've done it in the past through other programs,
mm-hmm.
where we had all the parties just discuss what were some of the needs. And we just, if it affect their schedule, we just somehow accommodated their needs, but at the same time they made up for the time maybe towards the end of the day or... there was just a lot of flexibility and job carving in the schedule.
What's job carving?
Job carving, as we all know, is basically creating, I would say, even a position that helps someone to be successful in a position. Here, I'm getting stuck here.
Well, I've done this in the past, too,
okay,
right? For me, job carving in the past has been... more along the lines of looking at the participant I've got in front of me and saying, okay, like, what's your strengths, and literally learning about them.
Yes.
And then going to an employer and saying, where are you having a business issue with your role? And like, well, because sometimes, you know, you've got like a receptionist or a data entry person sweeping your floor.
Yes.
Sometimes you've got that person watering plants and sweeping your floor and taking out the trash and doing all these things that are really entry level, that can be created into an entry level role that can clear space for your more skilled staff to do their duties better and more consistently, and it doesn't interrupt their day. And so sometimes we'll try and take those kinds of duties and make a job out of them. And hopefully it can create a little bit more business efficiency, at the same time creating an opportunity for an entry-level role. That's your most ideal situation.
Okay.
You know, or find a support system for other roles within there, right? It depends on how much time that employer has, the money that you're playing with, as far as both budget for the employer and if there's any monetary supports from the employment service, what that participant's looking for. Like, there's so many different moving parts. But I don't know if you found this too, but I found that usually if you have a participant who's motivated, reliable, and dependable, and you've got an employer who wants to give it a shot, like, that usually something works out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. A lot of the times the employer comes to you with, like, a with a role in mind.
Exactly.
Right? Like, they have a business need already, like, and so it gives you a framework to work with, and then you look at who you, the strengths of the individuals you're working with and sort of build from there, right?
Yes. At the end of the day, if the employer finds that that employee is, contributing to the company, and they can't let that client go or the employee go, they will do what it takes to keep that employee on.
Yeah.
And job carving is one of those tools, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. So can you give me, like, a example of, like, an experience where an employer was game to give somebody an opportunity that may not have had an opportunity in another circumstance, where it worked out really well?
Yes, actually, I can think of a few, but the one that comes to mind is I had a client who was a doctor back home in Afghanistan, and when he arrived to Canada, he really wanted to break into the medical field, obviously. Standards are different. He had to go back to school, but knowing that he had the medical background and the training that we provide, I placed him in an office with a foot doctor, dealing with orthotics, dealing with anything with the feet and legs, and the doctor was so impressed by his MRD, his motivated, reliable, dependable, and the obviously his experience was an asset, that she took the client under her wing, hired him under a different position. It was in a lab, I think making the casts for the legs or the molding.
Yeah.
And she decided, you know, I'm gonna mentor this student and show him the way to get your licenses for to becoming a doctor again. And to this day, he's still working there. Just to see him in his field, happy, contributing, and just using all of his experience from the past, it makes me happy. It makes me happy to see that he's happy, right? So.
And you touched on something else, which is that he's very skilled. Like, this is a professional, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly. And a lot of immigrants are highly skilled, but once they come to Canada, opportunities are very scarce, and there's no one wants to give them a chance just because of where they got their education or if it's not the standard. So it's good to see stories like that.
Yeah, there's the perceived risk, right?
Yes.
I don't know, you know, like, I mean, especially when you're coming from, like, a war-torn country. I had a participant a couple years ago where he's like, there's nothing left. You can't verify my education because my university has been leveled. He had a master's degree. He's like, now what do I do? There's nothing left. Here's a refugee. So... his English, you know, like, his English was spot on, you know, very high benchmark, and, like, he found employment, and he was working in the hospitality industry. But it's a challenge when, in that sort of situation, too, right? And you really have to find an employer who's gonna talk to somebody and go, and sort of go out on a limb a little bit.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's the good intentions.
Yes. Gives me goosebumps just talking about this.
I know, right? It's amazing. Like, and I was flying back from the States. I had to go out on the weekend, and I was sitting next to a business fellow who asked me. He's like, "So, what's your success rate like?" And I'm like, "Well, we're government funded, so if we don't have successes, we won't get the funding." Like, and so it obviously works. And so it's kind of interesting, because I think that when I talk to employers, sometimes there's this doubt of, I don't know if this is worth my time. Like, no, it's obviously, to my mind, it's like, no, this is obviously worth your time, because so many different you know, revenue streams are going into this because people believe in it, because there's evidence that it works, right?
Exactly. And to something you spoke to earlier, you mentioned, I find a lot of employers who have been through the situation, who were once immigrants, are willing to give that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I think that's who I usually target, is employers who've been through it and understand what it's all about, what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and they're more likely to give back.
Yeah. And the thing, as I agree with you, I mean, like, when you're, you know, small business owners and businesses, like, and managers, like, really, everybody knows somebody who's been in need at some point in their lives. Like, a qualified, a good person, somebody who's motivated, somebody who fell on hard times, somebody who had to live in their parents' basement because they couldn't find, you know, decent employment. You know, as an employer, you know, listening to this, or somebody reaching out, it's the, don't you know somebody who you wish you could have hired at some point who was just not in the right place at the right time? That's who we're working with.
Yes, yes. And I get to all the employers, if you're listening, give the opportunity, and you might be surprised.
Yeah.
You might be surprised, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think we all have those crazy success stories. And so then, like, the ones where you go home and you're like, oh, this is why I do my job, you know? But at the same time, do you have a story where it didn't work out, and what happened with the employer? Did they come back? Were you able to work it out? Like, can you give an example?
Yes, I have to think, but there's a few stories where it actually didn't work out. You see, with the way our program works, because we train our students, we spend a lot of time with them, so we kind of know in advance you might need a little more support,
mm-hmm.
just based on the 12 weeks we spend. So after they complete the 12 weeks, even if their computer skills are not up to par,
mm-hmm.
their English is not yet ready to be on a phone answering calls as reception, we still have to work with the clients and try to support them with tasks that they can handle,
mm-hmm.
and then slowly build from there.
Mm-hmm.
So one situation I could think of is I had this client who was just very sensitive, and maybe there was something undiagnosed, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but we just continued to support this client and find out what it is she can do. What are you comfortable doing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel comfortable filling in paperwork with clients? Do you feel comfortable talking to clients? Just
mm-hmm.
start with small steps. We had an employer who's very supportive, and I'm so glad that we have a lot of nonprofit organizations that support us, because in the private world, you know, it's a little bit more cutthroat, more statistics driven, more pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is fine for some of our participants.
Yes,
right.
Which is okay.
Yeah, but not everybody.
For not everybody. So this employer was very supportive, helped the client, spent additional time with writing scripts so the client can be comfortable with speaking, was more confident, spent more time partnering the person with a buddy at work so they can teach that person, and the client wouldn't feel annoyed asking many questions and just...
Mm-hmm.
You know, clients are sometimes afraid to even speak to their employers, managements, about any concerns. So that person had a buddy they can trust, feel confident with. And this employer just was very, we had a lot of communication. So if there was any problems, we would address it right away or try to find some solution to whatever the issue was. So not all employers are like that, but at the end of the day, I still remember that employer, which eventually helped that client succeed, pass the course, gain confidence. I'm just glad for those opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's even when things don't work out, like, the experience that the participant has, like, what the employer does has a pivotal role in that person's life, right?
Yes.
Like, and I think that is not understated. And that even if, you know, that person is with that organization for 6 weeks or for 3 weeks and they learn a new skill, or they learn that they don't, that they shouldn't be doing that, or yes, whatever, like, that is all really, really important for someone to know, and that that employer has provided an invaluable opportunity to that person.
Exactly.
Right, and it's great, right?
Exactly. There will be failures.
There will be failures. It doesn't always work out, but I think the big thing to know is that, you know, it's worth trying, and it's worth coming back, and everybody's different. And also, when it doesn't work out, like, if you're going to hire someone, what's the chance? You hire someone off the street.
Yes.
There's always going to be a chance that the retention's not there.
Exactly.
Right? And at least it, when you're working with, like, an organization like St. Stephen's, or where you've got a job developer like you, then you've got a buddy in that. You can increase your retention possibility. You can decrease your awkward conversations. You can have a source of education for both your new employee and yourself. Like, it's a really incredible resource. It's an underutilized resource, because I think people don't know that people like you exist.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Right? People like us.
Yes.
There we go.
And with all of these failures, it also helps job developers build closer relationships with employers.
Yeah.
Just knowing, you know, as long as you're upfront at the beginning, telling, like, because again, we have the luxury of knowing our clients for 12 mm-hmm. weeks. We can advise our employer in advance. These are probably the shortcomings of the client, and these are the strengths.
Yeah.
Just to build the relationship.
Absolutely.
And continue.
You know, like, and we can help the employer play to the participant's strengths.
Yes.
Right? Like, we can help that. It's a lot easier, because when you're interviewing someone, you're hiring them off the street, you spend an hour with them, you know, yeah, I think you'll do. And you hope that you're getting an authentic snapshot of that individual. But when you're working with a job developer, you're talking to somebody who has a much deeper understanding of a person,
yes,
right, than the snapshot that your recruiter or you on a busy day in between 12 meetings with customers waiting in the background, you know, while you're assessing if this person's a good match for your team is going to have. Like, it's just the nature of interviewing, right?
Yes.
And that interviewing process, time is money. You know, like, I keep repeating the statistic on the podcast, which is, you know, it takes, like, it's something like 60 days for a vacant position and $5,000 in turnover. Like, it's, that's a cost.
It is. It is. It's such a, it's a cost that employers absorb, and that's why I say hire a newcomer. Ah, yes. One thing comes to mind, though, with employers I've had in the past is, there are employers who will take advantage of newcomers because maybe they don't have their status isn't, or maybe their work permit is ending in a certain time.
Oh.
Right? So employers might take advantage of maybe underpaying or have some type of scare tactic, like you only have lunch, no breaks. So.
Well, I think that. I think there is a stereotype, though.
Yes.
Like, I mean, there are qualities that we see a lot, like, a lot of positive qualities that we see in the newcomer demographic. As you were speaking of, you know, educated and hardworking and very motivated. Like, anyone coming out of your program, I know, is motivated, reliable, dependable, because I know that's something that your program focuses on.
Yes.
There are these common hallmarks that you hear over and over again, and also one of those things that people think of is fear, right?
Yes.
And, you know, fear of losing an opportunity or being removed from the country or, you know, and so you can have a vulnerable person. You can be in a vulnerable place and be an excellent employee, but it can be easy to take advantage of someone sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's part of our job too.
Exactly. Exactly. And our role is just to make sure that, you know, that doesn't happen in the workforce or in the workplace, and
you know, but I've run into to employers who've done things like, I done things similar to that, or asked really inappropriate interview questions. Oh, the inappropriate interview question, or just, you know, had a break coordination issue, or like a variety of different kind of ESA or human rights or other issues. And frankly, a lot of it is lack of knowledge.
Yes.
Right? You're a small business owner, you're really busy, your primary concern is your core business functions and being successful and having your business succeed and grow and thrive. And so it's really easy to sort of fall back on a couple of these standards or have them or forget them or not study up on them or whatever because it's not your primary focus.
Exactly.
Right? Your small business, you don't have enough money for a human resources department.
No, for sure.
Right? And so compliance can become a problem. And I've had many an awkward conversation, you know, about that. And it's one of the reasons, actually, we're developing a toolkit for employers to try and help avoid situations like that.
Okay.
But I remember I had an employer with, like, an interview who asked an appropriate interview question. And I called them and I said, you know, that's illegal. And they're like, what? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, well, I'm really sorry. Like, they were very, very sorry. I mean, it was genuine. Because also, who wants a human rights complaint?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I've had employers, too, in the same situation. You've asked, can I have a female? Or can I have a male? Or can I have somebody who doesn't wear a lot of makeup? Or not wear the hijab? Or many things. And we just have to educate these employers.
Yeah.
I actually just say, excuse me, can you repeat what you were just requesting? Just so they know what they're... And then they kind of change their tone, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, we have to address it.
Yeah. We have to address it. There is an exception, which is the bona fide occupational requirement. Right? You know, 90% of our customers are Portuguese speaking.
Yes.
You know, like something like that. Like, okay, well. And we need someone who can speak Portuguese, great. But that means that if they have a background in an Asian background but happen to speak Portuguese, you know, that's who we're sending.
Exactly. Right? You have the skills.
Right? You have to have the skills and ability to do the job.
Yes.
Yeah. At the core, that's what we try and kill.
I'll talk about job development. I find that job development is truly an effective resource. Obviously, at the end of the day, a job developer should help you get employment,
mm-hmm.
or you should leave knowing you can get employment on your own,
yeah.
or have the confidence to do it. But I really feel a job developer really should connect you with the labor market. Every job developer has their own unique set of tools.
And style.
Yeah.
You gotta connect with who you're working with.
Exactly.
But that's the same thing goes for the employer.
Yes.
Right? It's the exact same thing. You've got to find someone you can work with, someone that fits with your business and understands your business. Absolutely. Hands down.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
I know you've been doing this for how many years have you been doing this?
I've now been at St. Stephen's for about 8 years. 8 years. Oh. 4 years in the Connections program.
Wow.
Yes. I've worked in OK as well. I've done all the youth programs. As well, so I've been around the block.
Yeah, you've done the full spectrum.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
We hope you enjoyed the conversation between Anthony and myself. As you heard, Anthony has a background in both community services and recruitment. And that's pretty common among job developers. A lot of us, myself included, have a business background and then look for ways to use our business skills in altruistic ways. Because the job development role is a bridge between the participants in the employment programs and businesses, job developers are great resources for businesses during their recruitment and onboarding processes. In addition, job developers can be great support in helping new employees have staying power. They can be involved for weeks or even months past the initial hire date to provide support to both the business and that new employee. Lastly, I just wanted to touch on one more thing. The story that Anthony told about this supportive employer, that is surprisingly easy to do. Making scripts, having a buddy system with a colleague, and a regular check-in are all common non-monetary ways to show your new employee support. And while in the situation Anthony mentioned, the employment was short-term, I have taken part in numerous other employment relationships where those types of measures have helped to retain the new employee. In fact, I was once employed as a recruiter, where the firm had the new employee buddy system for every single new employee. And I had a buddy for my first 3 months. And let me tell you, that manager was a lot more efficient and effective during the day without me asking them 100 basic new job questions. I just asked my buddy. It worked, and I was there for about 4 years. And I saw this process happen over and over again, and I myself was a mentor for a new person when they onboarded later on. And that system had a zero cost to the employer. In fact, it probably helped them build revenue as the sales manager was able to do more management duties rather than help the new guy. Or girl. Well, that wraps up episode 3 of Smash the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring. We hope you'll join us next time as we have a conversation with Perrin Kothari from the Livelihood Project. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at PeerPathwaysTO and engage with us. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again, and we hope you'll join us next time.
With the Syrian crisis, it was time for me to do something, to make the move, without waiting for the right opportunity and things like that. And so I left my job at TD Bank as an associate vice president and went to Germany and worked on the road where thousands of people were physically walking into Germany from Austria.
Wow.
Trying to understand their journeys, trying to understand what's their destination, where they want to land.
St. Stephen's Community House would like to thank United Way as well as the Ministry of Advanced Education and Skills Development and Employment Ontario for their continued support with this project. We would also like to acknowledge Monk Turner for allowing us to use Judicious Jude for our music as well as Satunium for the percussive loop.